It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our co-hosts, Shri Rajagopalan and Peter V.S. Bond, explore how brands and retailers engage with consumers online, in-store, and everywhere in between. And now, here are Shri and Peter.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys podcast. I'm Shri, of course, one of the aforementioned CPG Guys and your forever New York Giants fan. And today, Peter and I decided no baseball smack talk. Now relocated to Southern California, my co-host, of course, is PVSB, the VP of Partner Strategy and Dev at Fetch Rewards, a mobile loyalty platform. The one thing Peter and I completely agree on when it comes to sports is we're both Giants fans. How about that? So for the first time on this show, you will not hear a rivalry. And no debate on that one at all. So join me in welcoming the other CPG guy, the man with the velvet voice and the radio face, Mr. Bond. How are you today, sir?
Shri, I'm doing great, and I'm just hoping the Giants are going to be out playing, you know, the Chargers or the Rams, or I don't know what teams are still in LA. Are there football teams in LA? I don't know, maybe not. But anyhow, I'm excited about today. Great conversation, looking forward to. And as always, happy to be doing this with you. This is the best part of my week. I'm pretty sure it is yours as well.
Thank you for trying to invent the new smack talk in football, Peter. I am a Giants fan from the Northeast, so the LA part just doesn't fly. You're the Dodgers.
No, smack talk. I was joining in you in smack talking Los Angeles.
Smacking down the
team.
Southwest jointly.
That's
with
right,
me. How
man.
About that?
That's right. That's
and
right.
Y'all now know on the show where this is going to head in terms of football. But thank you, Peter. But before we get to our guest, I want to remind our audience that all of our content, including our series on profitability, a women's leadership series where Peter and I were able to contribute $8,000 to the Susan J. Kamen Fund, and our founders series can be found by visiting cpgguys.com. If you aren't already following us on LinkedIn, simply go to the search bar on linkedin.com, hit cpgguys, the search box, and when you'll see the blue plus button, aka follow, and you can simply do that. That way you'll get to see all of the content we're producing. Hey, Peter. Is this a subscription platform?
Nope. Everything we do, everything we produce, absolutely free.
Absolutely, folks. So chime in, join the conversation, and be part of shaping the industry as we respond to the changing needs of our consumer. Peter and I have had the opportunity last year. We launched this podcast and over 125 episodes deep to work with brands, retailers, service providers. We've dived into data, analytics, insights, stack, devices, AI, yeah, even AI, and so much more. We're honored that our podcast attracts so many industry luminaries from notable brands, and today we're pleased to do the second part of a two-part series with WNS, a leading provider of artificial intelligence-led data and analytics services with a focus on sales, marketing, supply chain solutions for CPG and retail. Their analytics services enable client and professional services companies to develop a better understanding of their customers and business and provide insights-based decision support. What can be better than insights-based decision-making? Please join Peter and me in welcoming to the podcast Sinan Gurman, SVP of Data and Analytics based in Dallas for WNS, and Vidyotam Reddy, Director of Market Intelligence and Analytics at Mars. Sinan and Vidyotam, how are you guys today?
Doing good. Hi there.
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm very excited about our conversation today.
Sinan, for the purpose of a multitasking and cross-functional audience, could you please first tell our audience where they can learn a little bit more about WNS and specifically what your team does at WNS?
Of course. Thanks, Sri. You can find more about our data and analytics services at www.wns.com/winning-with-insights, or you can just simply type WNS Winning with Insights to Google. It will be the first organic link you will see. Or even better, if you like a personalized experience, you can also connect with me on LinkedIn and mention CPG guys in your note, and I'll be more than happy to provide a personalized briefing based on your role, your category responsibility. And Sri, we talked quite a lot about what we do at WNS Data and Analytics Services in the previous episode. So, and the audience can refer to that for more details. But you like you mentioned in the intro, in summary, we are a full-service AI-led data, artificial intelligence-led data management, reporting, and advanced analytics agency serving the retail and CPG industries, primarily across sales, marketing, and supply chain functions.
Thank you for that, Sinan. And we, of course, will include site hyperlinks to everything you just mentioned in our episode Digital Liner Notes. So, folks, y'all can catch that easily about WNS. With all of these popular topics you've referred to, data, analytics, AI, whatnot, right? Let's jump right into it, because it's at CPG today in terms of decision-making is right at the intersection of all of this. So my first question is actually going to go to Vidyotam. So Vidyotam, why don't we start with what are the critical success factors? Maybe give us some advice on do's and don'ts for developing a global data strategy to enhance everything that can be done with the application of advanced analytic methods.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I'm happy to be here. Really excited to be on the podcast today. Now, you know, analytics is obviously the buzzword today, right? You hear about it everywhere, and lots of people are thinking and talking and, you know, and investing big dollars, you know, all over the world. And analytics should be the center of the conversation, because analytics is the bedrock on which you can, you know, build robust growth, right? Or robust, you know, engines of growth. Now, there's no new news here, right? And what I'm saying here is not the new news. However, the big question is, how does one drive the analytics agenda in a way that it's pragmatic, effective, and scalable, right? it's the trifecta that I think is ever eluding us, if you may. The analytics is a spectrum, right? It ranges from the basic what happened questions to the, you know, what can and is about to happen questions, right? So if you think of that spectrum, in my experience, we all, me included, by the way, early in my career, we all want to get to the high-end stuff. We all want to get to the sexy stuff, right? Like, you know, let me go kind of predict the future, if you may. But we don't have much patience nor tolerance to pay attention to the fundamentals of global data strategies because they're not sexy, they're mundane, nobody really wants to talk about this stuff. You know, people who deal with data strategy usually were relegated to the basements of organizations, correct? Never to be let out, if you may. But the point is that, you know, to be able to scale advanced analytics, you need to basically pay attention to the fundamentals, right? So, you know, scaling advanced analytics applications is, you know, is a challenge primarily because it's either due to non-existent at worst, right, and poor at best coherent data strategies, okay? In a nutshell, the do's and don'ts, if you may, of a global data strategy from my perspective are, first of all, the basic stuff, have a data coherent, you know, strategy, okay? Don't base the strategy on the number of zeros in the spend line. In my experience, actually, what I have found is that, you know, the number of zeros, you know, covariance in the spend is really has no correlation to the outcome. In fact, the more spending power one organization has, the more likely you are to not have a coherent approach. And this is, you know, this is what I've experienced in kind of, you know, my 25 years of doing this stuff. Cross-enterprise data assets need to be built with a reusable from the get-go mindset. You know, we're all about hydrating data lakes these days in organizations where very little attention is paid to reusing those data assets. Figure out a way that the business can stand up and own master data. Today, master data, if you may, is owned only by the IT functions, even among those where they're actually paying attention to it. So I think it's high time that the business has started owning master data protocols. And finally, use the Pareto approach, folks, right? 80-20. Don't go and try to boil the ocean here because it's not going to happen. So figure out the 20% that drives 80% of your strategy.
Just maybe if I may just add a few things about the master data management. We talked about some of the large artificial intelligence-led programs that WNS runs for some of the global CPGs in the first episode. How we saved a large CPG $50 million, you know, improving their master data management quality by 60%. I won't get into too much detail there, you know, but I encourage our audience to listen to that episode if they haven't yet. But in addition to these, you know, absolutely the data management piece is very critical. The business ownership is very critical. Where I think we really found our niche is in our ability to connect the business domain, the knowledge of business domain to data management, to data science, and eventually to actionable insights and back to business value. And in order to achieve this, we typically adopt a data and analytics center of excellence approach. And in fact, in most of some of our most recent implementations, now we're starting to call it data monetization center of excellence. Because we brutally focus on the culture of business value, plus an augmented governance to ensure efficient collaboration, consistent and self-explanatory data definitions. And finally, the use of intelligent cloud, I think, also makes a big difference for long-term adoption and value generation in these programs.
Sinan, thank you for that. Welcome back to the podcast, Vidyotham. It's such a pleasure to have you join us. You had me at hydrating data lakes. That just treat, write that one down. We're going to start using that more frequently. So let's, you talked about some great practices. By the way, your mention of the analyst in the basement running all the numbers. Of course, the iconic movie Office Space with the guy in the basement and the stapler just came right to my head. Oh, yeah. It's flooding through. Yep.
And then his office space keeps getting smaller and smaller, right?
Smaller and smaller. Get my stapler. So what I'd like to know is really we talk a lot about the research and the insights that come out of that research. What I'd like to know is how do we close the gap between the insights from research and the activation that can really address the issues that surface through that process?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being in the analytics space and driving, you know, best practices based on consumer behavior analytics, and you're now more kind of, you know, algorithm driven, big data kind of solutions, if you may, I think the challenge still remains the same is, you know, is how does one implement what, you know, what has been learned, right? And how do you kind of reduce that gap? And so when you say this closing the research to activation gap, to me, it's not just about, you know, just implementing what you've learned. You know, that's important. Don't get me wrong. You know, that's important. But it's also the virtuous cycle of learning, implementing quickly what you've learned, and then learning the effects of that pretty quickly, and then using that to close the loop back to the front end of it. You know what I mean? So it's that virtuous cycle. So to me, that to me is the whole equation, if you may, closing the research gap. So I just want to lay that context for how I think of that. Now, if you think of CPG, especially big CPG companies, it's usually an industry, you know, that has complex internal structures, way too much data, long decision cycles, and what takes days, say, for example, like a company in a company like Amazon would maybe take weeks and sometimes months within, you know, big CPG environments, right? You know, what we've done is we're trying to close that, and closing that research gap, to me, is we're trying some really cool experiments, if you may. So one of the things we've done is we've created a system in China where we can actually, we're on 2-week learning cycles for media, you know, impact, right? So we create formats of media, we throw it on a platform, and we expose it to enough people that we learn from it, and then we implement it on the front end. So I see a lot less of that, Peter, but to me, if you could get behind that virtuous cycle of, you know, getting behind the learning, implementing it, that to me is going to close the entire cycle of, you know, of research to implementation, right? You know, pricing is an example. For example, you know, on the pricing piece, I found in my experience, a lot of time we find pricing insights and we give them to the business, and the business will say to us, well, I'm sorry, but I can't implement your findings for at least 3 months, because that's how much 12 weeks is my kind of, you know, to market implementation, you know, window. And there's pieces like that I think you can address. And I don't think it's so much the learnings themselves, it's the implementation and the learning from that actually that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. And if I may also just add on top of that, guys, obviously, you know, building our insights analytics within those business process cycles, extremely critical. And it may sound cliche, given how much we talk about personalization in this podcast in general, right? I mean, we spend so much time trying to understand the end consumers of our products and build meaningful relationships with them, which is great. And that's what we all should be doing. But we often fail to drink our own champagne when it comes down to the consumers of our data analytics and insights, I think. And let me take a minute and show how a personalized and scalable approach to the data analytics would work. In the not so distant past, I had the opportunity to work with Vidyotnam and one of his business segment teams as they successfully launched a direct-to-consumer business, e-commerce business in China. They needed management dashboards and insights into their business performance, of course. So we quickly identified 4 key persona profiles. These are the chief financial officer, head of supply chain, head of direct to consumer, who is also responsible for marketing CRM with his own budget, by the way, and the head of operating partner, as they use a fulfillment partner during the early stages, and then they internalize the fulfillment after a while. So I had the opportunity to run a 3-week dashboard design sprint with this team in Shanghai. First, we started with capturing carefully framed and unconstrained business questions that were lingering in the minds of the management team, and separately for every one of them. We also understand their goals and objectives. And in parallel, we assessed data, the tool availability and other dependencies, the constraints, if you will, and conducted a very practical value-based prioritization. We then turned these business questions into prioritized business questions into metrics, KPIs, visualizations for each persona, as well as a strategic view where different functions need to collaborate a little more effectively, right? And of course, I think the frequent reviews and feedback, even if it's for like 15 minutes a day, is absolutely critical for long-term adoption. I believe we ended up like a version 18 or 19 in a three-week design sprint. One other very effective tactic I found to maximize adoption is the use of real data instead of dummy data during these sessions. This way, we're able to conduct a real business discussion instead of a theoretical technical requirements gathering discussion. We then visualize what we can today and lay out a data and analytics capability development roadmap for the missing gap. And also important to highlight, this whole prioritization and road mapping exercise is an ongoing process in line with ever-changing business requirements.
Thank you for that, Sinan, for chiming right in. You know, in our first episode with you and WNS, we spoke about marketing mix modeling, budget allocation, and overall investment optimization. You know, these days, of course, in the industry, we call it revenue growth management, or RGM, which is all about investment optimization. So Vidyodham, what's your perspective on RGM and investment optimization? And how can CPGs make better investments through being informed by data and analytics along these areas?
Yeah, so Sri, I would say that, you know, my general theme on this, or my general learning from this, is that the math to evaluate how effective spending on growth levers needs to be done or implemented has not changed, right? It's not changed for the better part of 80 years, you know. So there's no reason to invent any new methods or any new mathematics, or even more importantly, like I call it, no need for inventing new wheels here, right? However, the opportunity to me is how these methods are leveraged. Typically, broadly, in my experience, the application of these optimization methods, if you may, are seldom leveraged to drive long-term strategic decisions on how to allocate spend, right? They're usually utilized, for short-term decision-making. And there's a real reason for this. The real reason for this is that all measurement tools out there are primarily focused on evaluating short-term spend, right? So you look at your short-term implementations, you evaluate them, and then you use those as a proxy for long-term, you know, spending decisions. And I think that that's an opportunity for us as an industry, as an application, as a method to change. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to change the discussion within Mars, and, you know, and that's the work that my team is doing. And by the way, we're working with Sinan and WNS and Sinan's A team of analysts to take the long view on the topic, right? So we recently created a measurement framework, and we're kind of in cycle three of doing this for one of our key segments and markets, right? And the idea is we're taking a long-term, you know, view by taking long-term spending data. So we, by definition, don't rely on the past year spend. We actually look at least 3 to 5, potentially even 10 years of spending data, okay? That in itself is a revolutionary thing for a CPG company, because you'll hardly ever find an organization that has 10 years of you know, continuous data on anything, for that matter, right? So, but you can do this if you're planful about it. So the idea is we take that, we analyze it to come up with your high level spending recommendations, right? So we set the watermarks, if you may, for spending decisions based on that long term view, and then what we do is we take these long term response curves, and then we infuse those into the more day to day tactical tools, right? So big data and digitizing data assets has given us this opportunity, right? You have your daily SRM optimization tools, right, down to the mechanic tactic level. You have your media planning tools now because of the digital feedback loops of saying, how do I change my reach and frequency curves based on, right, based on, you know, how I invest and how I spend. So, but what we're doing is that we're taking these long-term spend learnings, infusing them into tactical tools, and we're letting and empowering businesses to, you know, to make those day-to-day decisions based on long-term, you know, response curve. So I think that's the big opportunity, and that's how I would recommend a change.
Vidyodham, your deconstruction of this is phenomenal. I'm mesmerized. So thank you for this. You're putting it in very relatable terms, and I know our audience is going to love that. So let's dig a little deeper here on the value equation. From your experience, investing against big data and analytics, is that more focused on driving the top line or the bottom line, or maybe it's both? I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, great question, Peter. This is the big trillion-dollar or even multiples of trillions of dollars question, correct? It used to be, we used to say million-dollar question. I think we're way beyond that. We've got to add many, many more zeros to that now in the paradigm of the digitizing of data assets. Now, if you think of the promise of digitizing data assets at the, you know, at the horizon of the big data promise, you know, the whole idea of building or implementing big data capabilities was very much to drive top lines, right? To drive, you know, above average innovation, above average growth, et cetera. In my observation, albeit a very CPG-centric observation, because that's where I've spent most of my, you know, my career and my experience, this promise is far from achieved. At least I've not seen very clear evidence of it, right? In other words, I've seen the big data investments drive a lot of the bottom line efficiencies, as opposed to driving your top line above average category growth, for example, or above average innovation performance, above average consumer-centric solutioning, if you may, right? It's the little guys who don't have the big data resources the big guys have that have been basically eating the lunch from the big guys. And I happen to be working for one of the big guys, right? So anyways, so I've experienced it painfully at times, but it's a fact. So I've seen overwhelming evidence of driving bottom line outcomes. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm very happy that we're driving these efficiencies, frankly, you know, in the matrix. However, a decade plus of being on this journey, in my analysis, is that there is a discussion that needs to happen here, right? We need to be at least having a conversation about, guys, is there ever a way to drive top line? And I think there is. So that's the point here. So if we were to correlate the entities, right, with the largest war chests in the space, right, like I was just saying before, who have overwhelmingly invested in digitizing data assets, they're not necessarily the ones that are consistently delivering above average category performance. It's a fact, right? You take the top 10 CPG companies and you'll see that they have a very cyclical way of delivering performance. They're not like, you know, they're not like consistently delivering above average. So I'm on a journey, like, you know, like you asked the question, I'm on a journey as well to objectively understand, you know, this, like, and in my work and my discussion with Sinan, you can imagine we have very exciting conversations on this topic. This is actually a topic of great interest for me. But just to answer your question, you know, straight, I do think that big data has driven overwhelmingly bottom line versus top line performance.
Yeah, and if I may also maybe add a few things on top of that, guys. I mean, I think it would be safe to say that I built my analytics career on initiatives that focused on innovation and top line growth significantly more than cost cutting, and it's a lot more challenging for sure, as it's not as easy to quantify the net incremental impact of your interventions. When we talk about sales growth versus cost reductions, right? In the first episode, we mentioned WNS as a leader amongst this competition in terms of the percentage of our revenues being tied to certain performance-based outcomes. In fact, our ability to evolve into a performance-based client engagement maturity is also very different when we look at top-line growth versus cost reduction opportunities. We can make quick assessment and contractually sign up to reduce your finance and accounting or procurement costs, sometimes even from day one, right? Because cost-related activities are very transactional in nature. They're very easy to measure. It's not the same in analytics that focus on top line growth. Even agreeing on the right methodology to measure true incrementality takes time, and a working relationship maturity of at least going through one real experimentation cycle in the market with our clients. Drawing a real baseline, on the other hand, and identifying the impact of every possible reason that may be changing our business is not as straightforward in CPG, right? And I tell you why, not all the reasons, but at least some of the analytically related ones. Like in digital, that may be the challenge of an accurate multi-touch attribution model, right? In physical, it may be your ability to quantify cannibalization, forward buying, pantry loading effects. But again, there is a big difference between a perfect decision and a better decision. And a perfect decision is a theoretical concept. It's not real. What really matters, as we've been talking about, is are we able to make better business decisions with the use of data and analytics than we did before? Meaning we are generating more value for our stakeholders. And I'll share a very exceptional, very quick example from a recent Fortune 300 client of ours who are in the automotive and heavy truck aftermarket and salvage parts business. We recently launched a customer segmentation and digital campaign management program with them, and we were able to agree to a top-line performance-based outcome from day one, as the client never executed any segmented and target campaigns in the past. And in that low level of maturity, we were confident about the incremental value we will drive on top of their existing business base. I bet you won't find easily such examples in the industry, Sri and Peter.
So, Peter, are you from the automotive and heavy truck aftermarket and salvage parts business industry?
I can't say I am.
You're not betting either in that case, it sounds like. So Sinan, that was actually a good summary right there of an opportunity or a case study right there from an industry quite different to CPG that may be directly applicable here. But you know, Sinan, part of this is you've been an analytics leader for quite a time over your career, kind of built it as you mentioned earlier. And in the process, you've obviously worked with a ton of Fortune 500 brands, some of the largest brands possible. Over the course of time, though, Sinan, as things have matured in data and analytics, what trends have you seen in this evolution? And are there predictions or forecasts you would make as to where this is going to go?
Yeah, it's a great and a loaded question, Sri. I'll try to focus on some of the key, most important parts. I think if you look at, 20 years back, compared to now, I think the data and technologies have evolved and driving significant improvements in our ability to communicate and influence, right? That's for sure. But I think the fundamentals of building and managing relationships are still the same. About 20 years ago, when I started my analytics career, most big CPG, they were in the initial stages of evolving from shipment-based data and analytics to syndicated point of sale, right? The data that we were buying for Nielsen and IRI at the time. And consumer focus was limited with relatively small-scale market research and focus groups, which arguably represented the overall market. Consumer advertising was at mass scale, mostly one-way, right? TV, radio, etc., and not really traceable to the persona. Then big CPGs started building direct retail feed point-of-sale databases, which with access to store-level granularity. I think that changed quite a bit. They started coupling these with geospatial data sources, which we talked about in the previous episode, and this enabled better localization capabilities, right? Local assortment, local pricing, promotion tactics, etc. Now, fast forward to today, with the accelerated adoption to ever fast-changing digital world, it's the age of channel explosion. It's collecting personally identifiable information and turning this information into meaningful communications and relationships with consumers. Now, when we say personally identifiable information, it has added the fourth dimension to the vast amount of data that CPG need to manage to keep ahead of competition. Historically, CPG is used to managing product dimension, market dimension, and also the time dimension, right? It's not an additional data source. It's the fourth dimension, the personal identifiable information. And variance in local regulations make management of this type of information very complex. But imagine all these data sources I mentioned earlier integrated together along with internal data sources. Maybe not so much fun for many to do, but a very exceptionally valuable asset for any CPG company today. I don't think many have cracked the code on this yet. Vidyotnam and I did a few of these together in our careers in the day. And some of those databases are still up and running, fueling various reporting analytics insight generation capabilities. I would definitely love to see more successful examples, including the PII dimension in the CPG industry. And of course, not to mention, we're already helping various CPG and retailers with the same and looking forward to do more in the future.
You know, Sri, this first party PII data thing sounds really interesting. I got to dig into more of this. This sounds like it could be the future. Just little joke from people know my background in any event.
The data analytics and loyalty CPG guy has spoken of.
So Vidyotham, terms like PIM, Product Information Manager, DAM, Data Asset Manager, that's kind of like the sexy talk of our industry right now. That's where everybody wants to play. But let's kind of get down to the meat and potatoes of the business, right? I want to understand about the value of pricing. You know, how does that work in the CPG world today that seems to be more about, you know, everyone's gravitating towards customer experience? Now, how effectively do you think price is still being used as a strategic lever in the industry?
Peter, thanks for the question. In my opinion, it is the most under-leveraged of most effective growth levers, if you ask me, right, within the CPG industry particularly. And I think that there's much opportunity there. So we spend a lot of time, you know, digitizing our data assets, optimizing media and trade budgets, and, you know, but I do think that the next frontier is a deep enterprise-wide understanding of, you know, how pricing actually works, right? And how to activate it as a legitimate long-term growth lever versus today it's more of a knee-jerk, opportunistic, let's close the profit hole, you know, activity that it enjoys, you know, among the top, you know, top players of the industry. You know, it basically is cost plus. It's, you know, it's like the modeling, if you may, for pricing today within organizations for the most part is cost plus. It's competitive based, and close the gap to my business model or my profit model, right? And the idea is that because of that, I do think that it has led to some very dysfunctional practices. So let me give you an example by what I mean by that. So if you really go out there and do some research, and I've done this, so I know the answer, if you may, is that you would expect that most companies are taking pricing actions based on opportunities presented to them, correct? Not true. The likelihood of companies taking pricing actions are directly tied to their financial or fiscal planning cycles. And so there's a question to be asked there. So if we're all about data-based decisioning, correct, I would say price is the place where that's been least evident. And I think that it's there's an opportunity for us to change that. So the idea is that let's step back. Let's try and pay attention to this. Let's first of all agree that it can be used as a long-term growth lever, right? And I'm at the helm of some teams where, you know, we've done analytics and we've done the analytics that have, you know, given teams the confidence to go take pricing, and they took pricing for the first time in 10 years, right? So those are the things that really, you know, I think they should be well past us. Like I said, it's the least understood, but also I think the one with the most opportunity for growing longer term.
If I may also add a few cents on top of what Vidyotham said. Of course, what Vidyotham highlighted around agility, flexibility required for these pricing decisions and process is very important. But I also like to highlight that with more CPGs getting access to direct store level point of sale feeds from retailers, right, opposed to, you know, grouped syndicated point of sale from Nielsen and IRI. Nielsen and IRI don't give us that granularity of store level, right? Let me share a large digital transformation case study from one of the largest convenience retailers in the world, as I believe CPGs have a lot to learn from retailers, especially on localization, right? Like managing local pricing, for example. The objective of this convenience retailer was to boost their retail sales with data and analytics, and the scope of the project included store clustering, out-of-shelf reduction, assortment optimization, everyday pricing, as well as promotion optimization. Obviously, the store clustering is a foundational enabler for most of these activities. We first clustered their stores based on their sales characteristics. And very quickly, one cluster stood out significantly with its skew towards larger pack sizes relative to the rest of the other stores, so bigger items. And this is a convenience environment, right, where most things are in smallest packs possible. So with this insight, we further analyzed this cluster, and we realized that there were no large grocery stores within a couple mile radius of these stores and a lot of residential development. So the shoppers use these gas stations as grocery fill-in stores due to their convenience. And when we simply looked at the pricing elasticities of these items in these stores, to nobody's surprise, we realized these large pack size items were not elastic at all. Meaning, you know, if the pricing changed, it didn't really impact demand significantly. So what do you do? We raised the regular prices on these items. The consumption demand didn't decline at all, and the margins were off the roof. So to Vietnam's earlier point, to tie it back to Vietnam's earlier point, the question, if you're a global company, how do you scale a valuable insight like this across the globe? And the answer to that is a global data and analytics center of excellence, right? That would help do that. And the program that I mentioned has now scaled across 16 plus countries globally.
All right. We're going to get to one of a topic that Sinan and I frequently discuss outside of this podcast because we just find it to be a fun topic, and that is D2C media and promo budget. Is it marketing? Is it trade? Above the line, below the line? Where should this, in y'all's opinion, belong in the industry?
Yeah, I can go first. I'm glad Sri, you and Sinan are you know passionately discussing this because this is a pet peeve of mine as well, right? As you can all imagine.
Oh, Vidyatham, I've been dealing with it for 5 years since I moved over from brick and mortar into the e-commerce, and now a whole swing back, right?
Yeah, I'd love to grab a beer sometime and join the both of you on that conversation. Looking forward to it. Or even Peter, probably you could join it too, and probably you'll have a good conversation. But I think the way to think about this, in my opinion, is that first of all, e-com, D2C, are not tactical levers. They should not be viewed as just another channel where we're selling stuff, right? I think that to me is the biggest kind of, you know, point of view. It should be thought of and leveraged, or these places should be thought of and leveraged as strategic ways to communicate with our customers or our consumers, right? The owner, in my opinion, the owner where this should sit, or who owns the budget, if you may, should be whomsoever has the decisioning rights on the strategic growth agenda. Now, you know, one would say, well, shouldn't it be the one who owns the growth agenda? In my opinion, everybody who is paid to lead at the company owns the growth agenda, but not everybody who's paid to lead at a company who owns the growth agenda respectfully has the decisioning rights on the growth agenda, right? So I think that to kind of put some more flavor on this, or to kind of, you know, cut to the chase, it should be placed with those who had the decisioning rights, right? The accountability and the responsibility, if you may. Now, if there was a need, however, to build a hierarchy of where this sits, then most likely the first consideration is whether the business is a pure play, right? Is that your only channel of selling stuff, if you may, or communicating to consumers? Then in that case, then probably you could make a case for this to be part of the operations side of the house. But however, most businesses are not, right? And especially the businesses that I come from, CPG is not. The chances are that we're delivering product through multiple channels, right? Then I would say that it absolutely has to sit within the marketing organization, right? Never IT or finance. Once again, this is my kind of point of view, my perspective on this. Like when we grab that beer, probably I can provide more details as to why I believe this with a passion. But I do think that it should be part of the, you know, part of the marketing side. I see a lot more movement to place this responsibility within the IT side of the organization. And that's because, you know, technology typically is the backbone of how you service these, you know, consumers who are in this channel, right? Or interface. But however, without marketing involvement, I think that you lose the nuance of the consumer, you know, insight, right? Of the behavior insight, if you mean that. That's why I was saying that it should be there. Now, you know, however, the other thing is that, you know, the huge broadside, you know, in a world that is more and more consumer centric is when you place it within the IT organization. So anyways, long story short, in my mind, it should be with marketing. And finally, I think the key question should be, how do we grow? And then everything else that follows should be really structured around that. So place it where you need to place it, but place it in a place where, you know, it makes the business grow.
Yeah, Shri, I won't take much on this one. I agree with Yotnam, but one thing I think is most important is, especially in a large CPG environment, I think it has to be a separate P&L, right? And it needs a very entrepreneurial leader who can work around various silos and get away with new ways of working. Shri, I mean, given your vast experience in this area, I'm really, really curious to hear your perspectives.
So this is actually pretty straightforward. First, let's hit up the budget piece of this, what you really alluded to with Yotam, which is more along the media and things of that nature. It's called marketing mix for a reason, right? So it's fairly straightforward where the budget should belong. I mean, it's the word marketing is already in there, so there's nothing to debate. You know, I tell people this world of digital is a lot more marketing than it is selling at the end of the day. And, you know, partnerships with retailers in terms of search, in terms of banner ads, and all the ecosystem conquesting things that lie on the website, largely is driving brand awareness. It's no different than other parts of the media mix, which is largely brand awareness. It just so happens on the digital journey that you get full funnel activation. To me, that is like excitement for marketing 305. Not disappointment or something mystical, but that also, Vidyotam, if you note, results in a lot of conversation about measuring ROAS very actively on digital, whereas it's much more passive offline, which is not actually right. Like, the measurements need to be apples and oranges. Everything spent digitally influences the in-store business model the same way as any other marketing campaign does. So attribution should be there. So I have a very strong viewpoint that that's the way it should be, and it's not going to change at this point because I've had experienced this over years. And then on the D2C side, Sinan, the question is, why does a brand get into D2C in the first place? If that's the native infrastructure and backbone of the brand in which they launch D2C, then that's always going to be its own P&L. It should be run that way, and that's how it should be scaled. But if you're an existing scale brand, I see D2C as a completely different purpose. It's a lot more about innovation, trial, getting the data, qualifying an innovation to receive the scale in store when taking it to a retail partner of choice. And really, the best opportunity for a brand to develop a relationship with the consumer, run surveys, engage the consumer in co-creating innovation, and creating a relationship of value with the consumer that the brand may still choose to activate at retail on a store shelf. So fairly straightforward to me. It's really, if you're a D2C native, that's how you're going to do it. Go forward because you know that ecosystem pretty well. But if that's not what you've been dependent on scale and you have it elsewhere, there's a role D2C can play in your life. But with Sinan, I'm going to jump into the closing section of this podcast. So let me remind our audience, first of all, that all our content can be found on cpgguys.com. And the best way to join this growing family and audience, those that contribute to this changing transformation that Sinan and Vidyotam have just discussed in the industry, whether it be data, analytics, top line, bottom line. Peter, I feel like we covered a ton in this episode. What do you think?
Listen, I didn't even get to ask these guys how the B-side of classic rock and roll artists like Green Day and the Rolling Stones contribute to leadership. By the way, for those millennials, B-side, it's when we used to buy music on vinyl and they were singles that went at 45 revolutions per minute and it was on the other side of the chorus song. Whole nother story. Look in the liner notes for the Easter egg, people. You're going to love it, and follow these guys on LinkedIn. They are epic in what they talk about. You really should pay attention to this stuff. But Shri, blown away. Phenomenal episode.
So we really hit the spectrum on this one. And video them for another episode. I'll save what is the R square of the leadership of the rock bands that Peter just introduced to us. But I want to, you know, for our audience here, the best way you can participate in shaping the show, who comes to the show, topics you'd like to hear about, go to linkedin.com, go to the search box, simply type CPG guys, hit the blue plus button, aka that's the follow button, and be part of this dialogue and influence it. Another way you can do that is go to ratethispodcast.com/CPGguys. Leave us a rating and a review on the Apple platform. But in the meanwhile, tell us what you want from this show. that's as easy as it gets. Sinan and Vidyodham, thank you to both of you for joining us on this episode and enriching the world with data and analytics.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Mr. Bond, another fun episode. Fun every week doing this with you.
I had the time of my life, Sri. I had the time of my life. Yes, that is a Green Day reference. Sorry, everybody.
There we go. He knows when he brings up these songs, I have to sing. Should I sing, Peter?
Go.
We're going to save the audience this time over because it's not a rap song. And if it's a rap song, I am going to sing it. And okay. To all our audience, thank you, folks. And we will see you soon in another episode of the CPG Guys.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.